This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Once I was lost in the woods, I saw a girl in a hood. She told me I should stick to a path. Wolves will plot behind my back. They wait for the ones who...
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Mightier Than the Sword on the Easy Chair Podcast. I'm Stephanie Spaulding, and I'm here with one of my favorite pals.
Laura Hurwitz.
Steph, I am so happy to see you.
It's good to be here.
Well, I think seeing you in you're wearing a really cool flower dress, and it makes me feel like spring.
Spring. This is the hope of spring,
yeah.
Because this morning I made the decision to wear no stockings, tights, or leggings or pants, and I went bare-legged for like one of the first times of the year, and it really was not bare-leg weather. But
I made a break for it.
I got to the car, got into work. I stay inside all day, so it was worth it. And now the sun is coming out, so I think I'll... At a certain point, you just have to, like, throw caution to the wind and just... You have to move on from winter, and that's what I've done.
Yeah. I think that was a brave move, but I would not have done that myself because you'll notice I'm wearing a nice long pair of jeans and some warm socks
and it's nice
sweater.
And warm in here, that's for sure. It's very cozy.
Crank that heat right up, Steph.
So last time we were talking about travels and travel writing. That was a great episode. That was fun.
I had so much fun with that, too. Yeah. I really did, and I learned some stuff from you. Actually, what I learned from you was not to put pressure on myself.
Yeah, we did talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is part of travel. Mm-hmm.
You were back from a trip to Norway, and I had been to Paris, and I promised I would write something, so I did. And I'll share it today, and then you have something you're going to share that you wrote sometime a while ago. How long ago?
Yeah. I wrote this around 15 years ago, and it got published in a book. I didn't do my homework.
That's okay.
The dog ate my homework. Actually, Charlie the dog couldn't eat anything.
I don't think
he'd be up to eating my homework. But I did do research,
Fantastic.
And I found this piece, and I think it'll
Excellent. So I will share a piece that I wrote about my trip to Paris recently. And what I wanted to do was, you know how, like, when you're traveling to a famous place, especially like an iconic place like Paris, I look online and I see people's pictures or like the top 10 sites, and everybody like does the same thing. Go to the Eiffel Tower, you go to the Louvre, you go to everything, and everybody's trip is basically the same. And everybody has the same exact picture standing in the same spot.
You're right.
And I was just kind of thinking about that and how cookie cutter that can feel. But then actually, if you have a good trip, and hopefully you do, like your real experience of those places is not the same so much as what you bring to it. And so with this piece, I basically was reflecting on sort of my top 10, then like just reflecting on them from there.
I love that idea.
So here we go. Number one, Louvre. Despite my resistance, Henry insists on taking my photo in front of the Mona Lisa. I try to match her expression. "You don't look very happy," he says. I say, "You don't look like Leonardo da Vinci." Number two, Airbnb. There's a box of CDs in the apartment, so I put them on to play in the background. Mostly 80s and 90s French music. Remember when we used to play CDs? Sigh. Now I will always associate Paris with jewel cases and nostalgia. Three, Montmartre. What I would not give for a time machine. 4. Musée d'Orsay. In the Impressionist section, Henry tells me, "Some of these are pretty good." 5. Musée de l'Orangerie. Is closed due to the social movement, which means a strike. 6. Eiffel Tower. I like it. 7. Grand Palais. Near the Grand Palais, we saw several rats near a trash can. "It's Ratatouille," I said. A passing local laughed and repeated the joke, "Ratatouille," and laughed. 8. Cimetière du Père Lachaise. We didn't bother to find the famous graves of dead people, but the snow was pretty. 9. The Cathedral of Saint-Denis. Behold the first ever Gothic cathedral. If at first you succeed, good on you, Abbot Suger. 10. Bengali coiffure. Henry gets his weekly haircut at this joint where we are linguistically twice or thrice removed. Next week, he will get his hair cut by me, at home in our kitchen, sitting on a stool, just as he does every Sunday, just as he will do every Sunday, forever, until we get too old.
That was hilarious. There were little snapshots that were honestly not like anything that anyone else would ever do. Were you going for humor?
Some humor. Because, like, that's, to me, reflected my experience there. Like, it was, you know, you're fun, you're joking. Like, definitely some humor, sure.
I love it. I love how spare it is.
Mm-hmm.
It may be my favorite just because I just thought it was pretty hilarious was the Eiffel Tower. I like it.
What more can I say? I like it.
Well, you could not say
it's true. Well, you can't ever say anything else about it.
You can't. Well, everything's been said kind of that one would say. Yeah.
It's there. I think that's why people, I mean, that's why it's really is as awesome as, and as iconic as people say. It really is cool. And it's not like bad. It lives up. You know, when I went to the Colosseum, it was like, yeah, okay. Seen it in pictures, that's what it looks like. And you think it's going to be bigger. But like with the Eiffel Tower, it's like, I just like it. And it's not for anything. I just like it.
I think it's cool that you distill it to, I like it. And that is it. Mm-hmm. Enough said, you know? Very perfect.
He gave it a like.
Well, I feel like my contribution here is going to be almost the polar opposite of what you have done, which is to be really economic with your words and funny and also, you know, sort of self-reflective. And what I was doing was I was writing a book about the Cayman Islands.
Okay.
So what I was trying to do, what the publisher wanted me to do with this book is talk about the Cayman Islands in a way that made it not just a resort island or a place where people launder money, but a real, like the real spirit of the island itself and the people of the island. So to that end, I went and I interviewed people.
Mm-hmm.
One of the people I interviewed was this woman, Miss Winnie. She was she was so cool. She was just a little bit crusty, you know, a little bit of a curmudgeon, if females can be a curmudgeon. And I think they can be.
Yeah.
We got there. Well, I'll read this story, but she was watching her soap opera.
Okay.
And I'll start it off all from there.
Okay.
Oh, and the other thing I want to say before I start reading, did you ever see the movie Up?
Yeah.
Okay, you know how he lives in that little house and it's like, he won't sell it.
Yes.
All that's Miss Winnie's
house. Oh, she's the holdout?
She's the holdout. And you can't quite see it. There's a picture here, but you sort of can see it. This little tiny frame house and these apartments in the middle of the city of Georgetown, which is the biggest city in Grand Cayman. At the end of a quiet lane off a busy street in Georgetown is a small cottage with a shady front porch, flowering hibiscus in the yard, and an occasional chicken strolling across the path. This is the quiet home of Miss Winnie. When we arrive to talk to her, she ushers us in politely, but briskly tells us to have a seat. This is my favorite soap opera. It will be over in 3 minutes. It was. When the final credits begin to roll, she switches the television off and settles back onto the sofa, ready to talk. Miss Winnie has clearly thought about everything we discuss and has formed definite opinions, which she enjoys sharing. Miss Winnie grew up in a farm in West Bay. Her father, James Alexander Evans, grew a variety of fruits and vegetables. God never made a more wonderful man, she tells us, recalling how he grew an abundance of produce, which he always shared with their neighbors. My father was generous, kind, and never too busy to listen. His memory is sweet to me. Miss Winnie loved her mother, too. She was a good, hard-working mother, but felt she was always too busy to take time from nursing and attending to the needs of others to enjoy her children. She kept herself so busy that she was never able to slow down. Miss Winnie learned from this. When she married and raised her two sons, she sacrificed to make the time to be with them. I don't just mean doing my work. I mean helping with their homework, playing games with them. She also believes in not sparing the rod. Discipline is good, but only discipline when you aren't really mad. Then you don't lash out in anger. That's the worst thing for a child. The best thing for a child, I ask her, unconditional love. A tribute to the efficacy of her child-rearing efforts is the fact that her two grown sons are educated, happy, and successful. Both live on Grand Cayman, and both visit her frequently. Miss Winnie talks at length about her childhood. She remembers getting together to eat popcorn. When the mosquitoes got too bad, we'd stay indoors and study the Bible. There was a lot of laughter in our homes. We'd play games and sing songs and have family time. Then everyone got together at church. Christmas time provides the most vivid memories for Miss Winnie. She remembers people going to the beach with thatch baskets and wheelbarrows to collect fresh sand, which was backed, which means carried, to the front yards so that a clean layer of sand could be raked over the existing sand, which gave the appearance of fresh snow. Gifts were simple. We had stockings filled with homemade gifts and peppermints. Everyone was happy with what little they got. Our favorite story of the several Miss Winnie stories involves one of her devoutly Christian neighbors who believed in keeping the Sabbath. Everyone in the neighborhood worked hard on Saturday to prepare for their day of rest, but this woman was even more zealous than most. She woke up one Sunday, though, only to realize with dismay that she'd forgotten to pick the breadfruit she noticed hanging on a tree in her yard the day before. After much deliberation, she dashed outside and seized the breadfruit, then told her neighbors, "I think I picked it so fast that God didn't see." Miss Winnie's eyes twinkle as she tells me that story. When we leave Miss Winnie, she walks us outside into her front yard, which is vibrant with hibiscus, roses, and snow on the mountain. While office and apartment buildings rise up all around, Miss Winnie's yard is an oasis of tranquility. Change is inevitable, but Miss Winnie resolutely holds on to her piece of old Cayman. That is that. I was telling Stephanie that in kind of reviewing all of my travel writing, I'm not crazy about it.
You know, when you were writing this book, you were doing it as a job and not as your own personal exploration. You had an assignment. You had to go out and do it. They probably found the people for you, or did you find
the people? That's exactly right. They found the people.
Yeah, so I think maybe it probably couldn't have that sort of authentic feel they were hoping for just for that reason.
Yeah, and I feel like it's a very... she was a really interesting woman. I don't even actually know what her deal was, like whether her husband died so she raised her boys herself. I do know she was a school teacher for many years, so I think she was the only support for her kids. Mm-hmm. But I would have loved to have known a little bit about her. Mm-hmm. I mean, what comes through in this to me is the fact that she's disciplined and she's got a cool house in the middle of the city. Uh-huh. I mean, it kind of ends.
It sounds like just the surface. Like, there's so much more.
Yeah.
You would need to go back to have this kind of piece be what you would want it to be. You'd have to, like, go so many times and visit and break bread and all of these things. And then you would have enough depth to really get that connection. And that would come through in your writing. So it's something you can't shortcut.
Yeah. But it's sort of funny to me to listen to your work, which is so spare with words, but I get a real sense of Paris. Mm-hmm. I don't really get much of a sense of Miss Winnie from what I wrote, and it's a lot longer.
Interesting.
And also, I think humor and I think self-reflection, genuine self-reflection, like when you're saying that I did this for a job, you can tell there's a forced quality to it. I'm describing everything in the room.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, you know, the history that you need to know.
Right.
And adding some fun detail.
And she's also answering the canned questions, the prepared questions. But if you had gone back 10 times and had dinner, and then after dinner on the 10th time, she told you a story, and that was the story that you included in your piece, it would have been amazing.
I think it would have been really cool. The one thing I did like about it, I liked her quote that her father's memory was sweet to her.
Yeah.
That was real.
That was really nice.
I also think, I mean, since I wrote this so long ago, in fact, I think it's 20 years that I wrote that.
So you're also a better writer now.
I'm a better writer.
Yeah. You've written a lot of in between now and then. And
I've evolved.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, this is largely a picture book. So I almost feel like the prose is kind of an add-on. Even the interviews are a little bit of an add-on. What really sells this book are the photographs.
The photographs, yeah.
And they're beautiful.
Yeah. And a lot of people who read, this is a kind of a coffee table style book, and a lot of people don't ever read them. They just flip through them. I mean, that's kind of what the purpose of a coffee table book is.
Which, I mean, should make me feel a little sad that I wrote a book that gets flipped
through. Doesn't get read.
But on the other hand, after reading this, I'm relieved.
It's just the pictures
got flipped through.
The pictures are, I'm sure, really beautiful.
Yeah, the pictures are great. And I think that's kind of where I would let this book lie. It rests on its pictures. But it is sort of cool to look on travel writing. This is travel writing that I personally didn't get much out of.
Uh-huh.
I did my job. Mm-hmm. It was an assignment.
A kind of, it's not new, but emerging, new in the last 10 years is that now we have YouTube, and we have so many people on YouTube who are documenting their travels
that way.
And one of the things that we did before we went to Paris was we watched tons of YouTube stuff about, you know, people in Paris. This is my Paris trip. And you do get a really wide variety. And you have some people, oh my gosh, that person is such a jerk. Or wow, that person is so cool. I really would like to know them. So I kind of like travel logging. It can be really cool. And there's so many really talented people who are doing that.
People do it for a living? Like they're just travel.
There are some people bloggers. That do. One of my favorite, Henry and I, we also like to do some backpacking and outdoor stuff, camping, hiking. And one of our favorite outdoor video bloggers is Darwin on the Trail. Hi, Darwin on the Trail. I hope that maybe you'll listen to this. I'm going to send you the link. He is currently hiking the Pacific Crest Trail.
Alone?
He may be parts of it with people and parts of it on his own, but he's been posting his videos about his preparations, his equipment, and he has a huge community of followers, and he will later post videos of the hike. Because it's hiking, you can't always do it when you're out there.
Right.
But it's the same with traveling. Oftentimes, people will edit videos and post videos once the trip is over, of course. So his, you know, reflections about what he likes about the hiking, what he likes about the equipment, his advice, because a lot of it's about advice for backpackers. And he's able to really almost make a living out of this and have some sponsors. And a lot of people do, like, there's, you know, some, like, Patreon. Have you heard of that?
No.
Some video bloggers use Patreon, which is kind of like a GoFundMe.
Okay.
Where if you start up a YouTube channel and people like your content, that's one way they can sponsor you and help you support your content. It can turn into a life-supporting endeavor. You can find ways for revenue from it, from income and support. And there are other people who do it as hobbies, who do it just as fun. So it's a huge range of different people, just like blogging, I guess, because a lot of bloggers just do it. They never make a dime. Other bloggers get really famous and get ads and stuff. So
yeah,
it's the same idea. So, but yeah, Darwin on the Trail, he's amazing. We really like him.
Okay, I'm going to have to check out Darwin.
Check out some
on
of his YouTube videos. He and his wife Snuggles. Those are trail names.
I'm glad
Darwin
that her actual given name is not Snuggles.
Yeah.
That would.
Well, I mean, that's a pretty famous bear, right? Snuggles from the laundry detergent. I can think of worse names than Snuggles, that's for sure.
I hardly can.
But it's a good trail name. It's an excellent trail name.
I wonder why he's Darwin.
He obviously has evolved.
And that's kind of a nice, serious endeavor, but why is Snuggles only Snuggles? I'm sorry.
Who knows?
Into the
Who knows? You'll never know the story behind that.
There's a backstory there, for sure.
Of course, with trail names, I think usually somebody gives you your name. So, yeah, somebody else names you. Sometimes. Maybe people get their own, too. I don't know.
Yeah, that's like when I was a tennis coach, the girls named me Killer.
Oh, so that's kind of like your version of a trail name.
Yeah, that
killer.
Was my killer.
It could not be further from the truth.
Yeah, that was it. It was definitely a sarcastic.
Yeah, because
I was the, you know, run twice around the tennis court. I don't feel like it. Okay,
don't then. Come and get a hug instead.
Yes, we did not have a winning record, but we had a very happy team.
That's good. That's important.
This was so good, and I'm so glad you did
fun.
Your assignment. You upheld your end, and I feel bad that I didn't uphold mine.
Well, it's never too late.
I will write something. You know
you
what?
Can write
that
something.
Actually inspires me to write something that is better than what I wrote.
Maybe you could even go and do something, like even reflecting on Cayman Islands. Like, what was it really like for you, that experience?
I would like to do that. always time to go back and reclaim a good Cayman Island story and to start drinking rum.
Maybe if you do drink some rum, it will inspire you to get back in that mindset.
The ideas just keep coming, Stephanie. You are really on a roll today. I'm going to start drinking and I'm going to start writing. That's it.
Our job here is done. So take that piece of advice.
Actually, guys, if you want to give us a little advice, if you want to tell us anything, please, please, please email us at easycheerpodcast@gmail.com.
And send us something you've written about a trip you've taken.
Yeah, we'll read it. We will. And we would love to hear from you. And we say that sincerely.
That's right. So take care of yourselves, everybody, and travel and write.
Yeah. Until next time.
Bye. That was a HeadGum Podcast.